Bob, I'm an alcoholic. Wow, John and I go way, way back. It's neat. He drove down from Gainesville to be with us and share his experience, strength, and hope. And this guy does a ton of service work. And he's still involved with the newcomer today. It keeps him sober, keeps him on the straight and narrow. And you know, we've cried a little bit together. We've laughed a whole lot together. And I've had a ton of fun with this man, and he's the one that opened his life and shared his experience, strength, and hope with me. So I give you my friend and my mentor.
I'm John, and I am an alcoholic, and I'm really pleased to be here. You guys do this every Friday night? Jim and I could be down here. No great food. Bob had asked me several weeks ago, and I'm honored to be here. It's been a long time since I've been at this meeting. I got sober in Roswell in 1981. 20 years ago, I moved up to Gainesville, and I like it there. I'm a member of the Hulk, and we have bank robbers, bank managers, and bank presidents, all meeting in the same room. It's an eclectic group of people, and if you're that way, please come by and see us. I was the middle child of three. I have an older sister and a younger brother. Both are 4 years apart from me. So I looked up to my sister pretty much. I grew up in Atlanta and right around Peachtree Battle area, right around Bobby Jones Golf Course, if anybody knows that. It was a small neighborhood then. Atlanta was a small city at that time, relatively speaking. And it was a great life. I went to elementary school there, went there to high school. I started drinking in high school. Instead of playing sports, I played sports for 2 years, and I got hurt, and I said, nah, I'm not going back to that. The rest of the crowd drank beer after school, and that was more fun. I was a fairly good student, regardless of what was going on with me. When I graduated, I went to the University of Georgia. I'm a Bulldog and proud of it. It was a lot of fun, some of the best years of my life. But drugs and alcohol were limitations. Somewhere along the line there, you know, I married the love of my life that was in college with me. We're still together today after 54 years. You could ask her why she stayed during those first 10 years that were so rough. She'd just say, it wasn't out of love. I didn't have anywhere to go. And I understand that. I traveled in my job. I was a manufacturer's rep. I sold contract furniture. That is a license for an alcoholic to run wild. For myself, I worked for my father is how I got into the business. I worked for him, and then he retired, and I took over the business. And I traveled Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and Tennessee. And that's good area, good drinking area. And I know with me, I could come home on the weekends, recuperate a little bit, clean my clothes, and get back in the car and leave again. My whole existence, I felt, was providing for my family, financially. Emotionally, my father wasn't around most of the time, so I didn't know all about that. But I was the one who had to feed the money in, and that's all I felt my job was. You know, be nice on weekends. And my son was born 5 years into our marriage. And I think that's where my drinking really picked up. because the responsibilities and the money and the things that were going out, I was scared to death. I'd drink. No, I didn't drink at home much. I was a bar drinker, and I'd come home at 7. If I had really too much to drink, I'd order a pizza and ride with that guy home. So my wife saw a pizza coming. She was pissed. But I came to a point in my life where alcohol was not working. And I didn't really know that. I didn't know another way of life. My wife, one night I came in from the road and she said, the four words that every man's scared to death of, we got to talk. I was like, oh, shit. And she said, you know, your drinking's out of hand. And I'm not going to live with you anymore and watch you kill yourself. So you make plans to leave or quit. Now, my father-in-law, I knew all along, right before we were married, came into AA and got clean, got sober. And so you can imagine Thanksgivings and birthdays and stuff where I'm coming in with my total hangover, and he's sober, and I'm sitting there like, let's get out of here as quick as possible. But he was the man that saved me when I needed it. He took me to my first meeting, and he understood me. You know, at that point in my life, I didn't know whether I was being understood or not. A lot of things were going wrong. I couldn't keep up with them. I owed a lot of money to the government. I was in a turmoil. I was scared to death. I came into the rooms with the idea of staying for a month and then easing back out. I didn't want to stay sober. I knew that. I didn't come in to stay sober. I came in to keep my job and to keep my marriage. And I was told early on, if you aren't here for yourself, it ain't going to work. Because if you can't get sober for yourself, you aren't going to get sober for long. And that was the truth. And you people talked about the 12 steps. And I said, listen, I'm in here for alcohol. I don't want to get that sober. I just want to get sober enough. And I spent 18 months coming in and out of these rooms. I think one time I had 6 months. And that's what I could do. My last drunk, I don't remember. I was gone for 3 days, and I woke up on my front porch. And my wife would not let me in. She said, we're splitting the house, and you're getting the outside, and I'm taking the inside. 50-50. I was fortunate enough that I had phone numbers of people in my home group that I went to. And I said, please just call them. Because I had no idea where my car was. I'd been in the same clothes for 3 days. I stunk. These three guys show up and help me. What a lifeline that was. For me, they had said, you know, you've got to make a commitment. I had come prior to that time, a close friend of mine in the meetings that I went to, Doc C, some of you might know the name, he and I went out to breakfast. And I said, Doc, what do you think I ought to do? I can't stop drinking. He said, first, start buying handles because half pints don't do it. And you'll save money. And I went, you son of a bitch. He said, that's what you want, isn't it? I said, well, why can't I stay sober? He looked me in the eye and he said, you don't have the one requirement that it takes And I said, for God's sake, tell me. He said, you don't have a desire. And until you have a desire, you're pissing in the wind. And that was true. So I got a sponsor, not one I liked. I really didn't like this man. And he was about my age now, then, and I was 30 years old. And he said, I'm going to be your sponsor. I didn't want a sponsor. I needed one more person on my ass like I did. You know? And that's what I thought it was. So I said, okay. And he said, we're going to go to a lot of meetings together, and you're going to be driving because my eyes are not good at night. What the hell? Okay, I'll give you a ride if you need one. So we started up a relationship. And a wonderful man. He had been sober 13 years at that time. And somewhere during that year, his wife died. He went out. And I wanted to save him. So he said he was going to Las Vegas, but he didn't make it up, just up 85 some in a hotel room. And I went in, two of us went in. He could bubble a quart of liquor. I hadn't seen that. Somebody turns it up, and it was tough on me. He came back into the program and was able to get sober, but then he moved down to Florida, and a couple months later, he hit a bridge embankment, and I think he took his own life, and it was devastating. It came to me at that time, this is a real disease that kills. There's nothing halfway about it, because alcohol wants me dead. Using my sponsor, I worked the 12 steps to the best of my ability. When we look at the first step and we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, I had to come to that understanding because I, like many others, felt I was unique. You don't know. If I get into martinis, it could be bad. But otherwise, it was bad. And I was enough alcoholic for me. I learned that along the line. I don't have to be the crawling drunk, whatever. I was enough for me. I couldn't put down a drink. I couldn't say, no, I'm not drinking tonight. But working the steps, admitting that I was alcoholic, and accepting that I was alcoholic were two different things. I knew by my actions that I was an alcoholic. But accepting that for what it was, my mother was an alcoholic. She used to lock me out of the house when I'd get off the bus from school because she was passed out and locked the house up. And I can remember how upset I'd get. I'd be outside the window. I could see her, but I couldn't get her up. And that was not going to be me. My father drank, and I was in business with him for 4 or 5 years. And I always thought I was like him. We drank a lot together. He was my drinking buddy. But I didn't drink like he drank. So I was my mother's or whatever. I was in all of these denial ideas. And was it hereditary or did I pick it up from a toilet seat? How did I get to be alcoholic? Today I believe it was my mother. My father, I remember I was 3 years sober and he lived in Sarasota and I went down there. And he said, you know, I can't drink. I said, oh. He said, I'm on a medication. I can't drink for the next 6 months. I said, does it bother you? No. He said, yeah. we're playing golf and everybody goes into the clubhouse, I feel estranged. I said, that's the only time? Yeah. Holy, I've been laboring under a misconception for a long time. My brother drinks, but not to the excess that I see him drunk. I'm sure Tim has, but not like I did. And my older sister drinks, but she doesn't drink like me. I don't analyze that anymore. I try and utilize what I get in these rooms, and it means a lot more to me than trying to figure that out. But that second half of step one, the unmanageability, for me, I felt I'd met that obligation financially that I provided for my family, that I did those things. They were in private school, both my children. And on the outside, it looked like I was doing good. I was about to lose a job. I owed the IRS a lot of money, more than I had ever thought I'd have. But I still couldn't see that unmanageability in my life. But I got there. I proved that to myself as well. When I came up and the second step, I saw that God in there. I saw God in, written in the 12 steps. When I walked into the room and I went, we talk about, my thoughts were a religious group, and I didn't want that. I had it in my life. I'd been brought up in a church. I was made to be brought up in the church. My parents didn't go. They just dropped the kids off at Sunday. They'd leave, you know, like, where are you going? God was a tough thing for me, the concept, to relate to that. And being able to say, to bring me back to sanity, I knew I was insane. A friend of ours used to say, and I love to hear it, he said he was in a cocktail party in California, and wound up 5 days later in Birmingham in a mental institute. He didn't know what happened. But they were telling him, sit down, we think you've got mental problems. He said, no, I'm not. I'm fine. Then they said, well, then you're an alcoholic. He said, no, I got mental problems. I got mental problems. That's about like I was. The other thing with God, my first higher power was my home group. I love the analogy that Clancy, and I don't know how many of you are familiar with Clancy, a circuit speaker. And one of the things that I heard that he said that made sense was, if you have trouble getting a higher power, take your clothes off and walk up to the main street out there and wave at cars. And pretty soon a power greater than yourself will show up. And you can work from that. And I thought about that. But the group served me for a while, but it wasn't enough. My sponsor continued to tell me to seek God in whatever way I could seek God and find God in my daily living. But that was a process. It didn't happen overnight for me. It was a number of years. It really took a process. It was through the sharing that I heard in the rooms. The people, I knew you people were sincere, and you had a conviction, and you had a faith in a God greater than yourself. And I wanted that. But that took a while. Today, I do have a God working in my life. It might not be yours, but he's working good for me. And I rely on him today as much as I can. The old thing of trying to turn everything over to God is tough. Like a friend of mine says, the hardest part of trusting God is trusting God. And I believe that's true with me. When I got to the third step, my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understood Him, well, that was changing daily. A friend of ours always says, "And my will is my life, my will and my life over to the care of God. My will are my thoughts, what I think on a daily basis. And my life is the actions behind those thoughts. And can I turn them over to a God of my understanding?" Sometimes it's easier than other times. But I know I'm in the right direction because I get a good feedback from that. The fourth step put me out at least three or four times. I'd started. First time I was writing the great American novel. I wrote 17 pages of shit that I could remember. And I got back to my sponsor. He said, "Does all that stuff bother you today?" I said, "No, I had to really think about it." He said, "Then why put it down? You know, the fact is you stole $25 from your brother when you were 15. Is that all you? No. Okay. You put down the things that bother you. You put down the things that you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and worry about. Or they creep into your mind when you're having fun." And so I was able to start on that the best I could. With me, I went to Conyers, which the monks, they don't talk. That was their order. And there was a guy by the name of Damien that worked at the monastery, and he worked with alcoholics. I put in a request to see him, and then I go back to a room. It's one bed, one table, one chair, very minimum. And I waited for him. They said, "He's out on the tractor. He'll be in later on before dinner." And this guy comes in with a gold T-shirt on with a dragon on it. He said, "I'm sorry. I've been on the tractor all day. I'm Damien, and I'll work with you." He said, "Where are you on this?" I said, "Well, I really need to start over." He said, "How long have you been doing this?" "Almost 2 years." He said, "You don't need to start over. Do your fourth step tonight." And I did. I put down, he said, "Put down whatever sticks out like a sore thumb to you." And I did that. And we met the next day, and he said, "Now give me all your good attributes." So we balanced them out. I don't know whether he's still alive or working down there now. You know, little communication comes from the monastery. You don't get much. But as Bob said, the life that AA has given me has been incredible. I've been able to see both my children. I have a daughter that was born 4 years after my son, and they're adults now. One of them drinks wine every now and then, and one of them drinks whiskey, but sips it. I've never seen either one of them drunk. What a blessing. Because their grandfather and my mother, their grandmother, both had alcoholism. So I feel very grateful there. My wife and I, for the most part, have been able to travel all over the world and enjoy it. Bob and I, in our early sobriety, both of us liked scuba diving. And at a party, we were talking about it, and we put together a trip and started doing that a couple times a year. And we're able to go to meetings all over the world. Many times we didn't. They were speaking a different language, but when they were reading the steps, I knew what they were talking about. Today, my challenge is that we have a tremendous amount of recovering alcoholics in Gainesville going through halfway houses. We have about six there. So we have a lot of young men, a lot of men of different ages that come in that really don't have a skill, that have really been tossed around in life. A lot of them are coming out of prison and don't know, can't navigate life today. I mean, if you went into prison before cell phones came out, you come out, you're in the dark, because we depend on them so much. So I'm afforded the opportunity to work with a lot of them. A lot of them don't want it. You know, they're placed in those homes rather than going to prison for a year. And from what they tell me, at least 40% of the people say, I'll stay drinking and go to prison for a year. And the other ones come into rehab. But they're at varying degrees of what they want out of sobriety. Without that desire, you can't get it. I couldn't until I really had and could make the conviction to myself, my innermost self, that I'm alcoholic. It could be a lot of things. I'm grateful for that. A drunkalog, I'm no better than the best of you and no worse than the worst of you. I did a lot of things I wouldn't have done sober when I was drunk. I know that. I said a lot of things. But this program gave me that opportunity to make a reprimand with my life and make something of it today. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the God that this program has given me, that does work in my life on a daily basis. The life that I have today, the woman that I love is still with me. She still gives me a lot of shit, but she's still with me. I'm still with her. I can't ask for a lot more than that out of life. And with that, I'll pass. And I appreciate your listening.
Thank you, John. That was great.
First I slip, and then I quit to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul. Thank you. below.